We're going to continue in our Samuel series. But first of all, I want to tell you a little story. The kids this last week went down to my parents' house in southern Wisconsin, and they spent some time up on my grandpa's land. You guys had fun, right?
Yeah.
And one of the stories I heard when I went down the other day to pick them up from my parents' make the swap is that my dad foolishly made a bet to Henry. There's a tree swing on Grandpa's land, and my dad said, "Henry, if you can swing high enough and hit your feet on the other branch, I'll give you $20." Now my dad is pretty good about, you know, looking at things and figuring things out, but Henry apparently did it 6 times. Now, thankfully, my dad was careful about his words and didn't say $20 each time, because Henry already figured out the math. But Henry did get $20 from my dad, and my dad learned a lesson because of that immediate regret. So I don't think it took Henry too long, did it? So there's Henry with his $20. Now, I did have a sermon illustration before that, but I thought I'd add that one in as well. Just how my dad had some regret and learned his lesson. But for me, quite often my regret is when I go to Chinese buffets. I think I might have told you this before. I absolutely love China buffet, okay? I love it. But every time I go, I'm having this conversation in my mind on the way there, like, do I really want this? Because I know how I feel after every time I eat at a Chinese buffet. I feel bloated, I don't feel good, I feel tired, you know. I have this immediate regret, probably 10 minutes after leaving the buffet. Anyone else with me on that? But, yes? No? No, you guys don't? You probably don't eat as much as me. I try to get my money's worth. But my whole point is this morning, a lot of times we'll make decisions and we know ahead of time that we probably shouldn't do this. And we know we're going to regret it later, but yet we still follow through with it. And we're going to see that this morning as we go through 1 Samuel 8 through 10. Israel also knows what they should do or should not do, and yet they make a decision, and they're going to regret it later on. Now, before we get started in 1 Samuel, if you want to turn to Genesis 49, I'm going to give some background information that is going to help us understand this week and also in the weeks ahead. Genesis 49 is when Jacob, the father of the 12 sons, you guys have heard the 12 sons of Israel or the 12 tribes of Israel. This is Jacob nearing his death, and he calls for his sons and he wants to bless them. So he gives them each a prophetic blessing in a sense. And what we find when we read this story isn't so much that this plays out in the son himself, but in his tribe, in his family genealogy. So as you're reading through the Old Testament, you can look back at Genesis 49 and say, wow, the Lord spoke through Jacob's blessing as to what this tribe would become. And just this morning, we're going to look at two different blessings. One of them is very long and the other one is short. And hopefully it will help us get a framework as we move forward in the weeks ahead. So let's look at Genesis 49, starting in verse 8. This is when Jacob is blessing his son Judah. And he says, "Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's cub. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down, he crouched as a lion, and as a lioness, who dares rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until tribute comes to him, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Binding his foal to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine, he has washed his garments in wine, and his vesture in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk." So as you're reading this, you realize, wow, the other guy's got some, you know, some sort of prophetic blessing, but then you get to Judah and you say, this is a really big one. And not only that, but it sure sounds like, when it says the scepter shall not depart from Judah, Judah's tribe is going to become kings. So if we have faith that the Lord is speaking prophetically through Jacob as he blesses his sons, we can say, well, this is a clue that, you know, how many times I go back to that promised offspring in Genesis 3. This is a clue that the Lord's going to bless this tribe, probably with that offspring, and he's going to be a king. Now, let's just look at the very last one as well in verse 27. This is the last son that Jacob blesses before his death. This is Benjamin, Joseph's younger brother. And he says, Benjamin is a ravenous wolf, in the morning devouring the prey and at evening dividing the spoil. So again, you'd say, well, how is that a blessing? That seems kind of negative, doesn't it? And again, we're going to see this in the weeks ahead, how this plays out. But just put that on the back burner for right now. Know that there would be a king to rule over Israel, and he would come from Judah. He would be the one to fight his enemies. But then also remember this little thing about Benjamin. One other scripture I want to look at before we keep moving forward is Deuteronomy 17. So if you can find that. Now this is just a background when this was spoken. This is when Israel was in the wilderness and they were about to go into the promised land. And Moses, before Israel goes into the promised land, Moses gives this long sermon and he does a retelling of the law. And he also shares what is going to happen in the days ahead. So Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 to 20. This is when Israel asks for a king in the future. When you come to the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are around me, you may indeed set a king over you, whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you, who is not your brother. Only he must not acquire many horses for himself, or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses. Since the Lord has said to you, you shall never return that way again. And he shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he acquire for himself excessive silver and gold. And when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law, approved by the Levitical priests, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes and doing them, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment, either the right hand or the left, so that he may continue long in his kingdom, he and his children's children in Israel. So again, what are we reading here? Israel's king, when they get to that spot, must be an Israelite. He must not acquire many horses or chariots, especially from Egypt. God rescued them from Egypt. He's saying, don't ever go back down there. Israel's king must not acquire many wives, must not acquire excessive silver and gold, and he must make a copy of God's law, read it, and keep it, so that he, how does it say, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers, so that you don't have a tall heart, in a sense, a proud heart. So it's permissible. The Lord will give them a king, but only within the Lord's boundaries. All right, last week we looked at Israel being defeated by the Philistines. Eli's sons died in the same day, just as the Lord had said. The Ark of the Covenant, remember, was taken from the place of the tabernacle, and the Philistines took it and put it in their God's temple, and God sent plagues and defeated the Philistines, and they sent the Ark back into Israel, and it was kept outside Israel for 20 years, and the people are lamenting. God's glory is gone. He's no longer dwelling in the tabernacle among his people. Samuel makes a sacrifice and tells Israel to repent and direct their hearts to the Lord. And that's where we left off last week. So let's look at 1 Samuel 8. This is years later. When Samuel became old, he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn son was Joel, and the name of his second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Yet his sons did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after gain. They took bribes and perverted justice. It kind of sounds like a retelling of Eli and his sons, doesn't it? Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Behold, you are old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord. So again, just a difference between a judge and a king. So far up to this point, when the people have been living in Israel, God has raised up different judges. So these are specific people called up for a specific time, for a specific purpose. They're coming to judge Israel and the nations around them. A lot of times we see in the book of Judges that they save Israel from their oppressors. But now Israel is wanting a shift. They don't want a judge anymore. They're saying, we want a king like what? Like all the nations. And I think that's the big warning Samuel is getting, and he's concerned. It's displeasing him. Do you guys realize what all comes with that? The Lord said to Samuel, "Obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, a judge, but they have rejected me from being king over them. According to all the deeds that they have done, from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are also doing to you. Now then, obey their voice, only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." So God's, if you remember last week, he just proved that he can protect his people. He went before them. Remember, the ark was captured, but it was actually God fighting for his people. He defeated the Philistines' god Dagon. He sent plagues among the Philistines. He proved he can be their king and protect his people. But now they're demanding a king just like the other nations. And God says to Samuel, give them what they want. He actually tells Samuel this three times, and Samuel tries to persuade the people. I'm just going to summarize the next chunk of scripture there, but he says, "Israel, do you know what you're asking? If you have a king, he will take your sons. They'll drive chariots and be in the army. They'll work in the fields and make tools of war. If you have a king, he'll take your daughters to be his perfumers and cooks and bakers. If you have a king, he will take your best fields and vineyards and give it to his servants. If you have a king, he will tax your grain and your vineyards to feed his servants. And if you have a king, he will take your servants and animals and make them his." It's kind of that warning I get before I go to a China buffet. Like, I know exactly what's going to come, right? But yet I still say, no, I want Chinese buffet with all that MSG. Till Samuel's trying to persuade them. And he ends his speech by saying, "In that day, when you have that king, you will cry out because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." You're going to cry out. Now contrast that with the last time people cried out in chapter 7. Remember it said in chapter 7, after God answered and saved them, "And the people of Israel said to Samuel, 'Do not cease to cry out to the Lord our God for us, that he may save us from the hand of the Philistines.' So Samuel took a nursing lamb and offered it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. And Samuel cried out to the Lord for Israel, and the Lord answered him." These are the people crying out to their actual king, God, and he's answering them. And yet it's not too much longer, and we get to this point. They're crying out for a king, and Samuel is warning them, there will be a day where you cry out and the Lord will not answer you because of what you've chosen. This was meant to be a warning to the people. Do you really want this? But the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, but there shall be a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." We want this image of a leader to go out and win victories. And when Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, obey their voice and make them a king. Give them what they want. You want an image of a king? You want to be like other nations? Do you understand all a king requires? Do it. Then we get to chapter 9, and we get introduced to a new man, new character here. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, son of Zeror, son of Bechorath, son of Aphia. I don't know why I put all this stuff in here. A Benjamite. So we're getting what tribe he's from. So if we remember back to Genesis 49, that should tell us something. A man of wealth. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. So the author is telling us something here. We're really focusing on his physical appearance, aren't we? He's handsome. It says that twice. I wish I could put a picture up there for you ladies so you could see this, but I don't have one. Their cameras weren't so good in that day. But again, we're just getting this picture, and they're really emphasizing this, these physical attributes of Saul. And I'm going to summarize the next story, but as we continue reading, we realize Kish, Saul's father, lost some donkeys, and he sends Saul and his servant out to go find them. And they searched for 3 days. And as I was studying this story this week, I realized that this story is telling us a little bit about Saul's character. So they searched 3 days to find these lost donkeys for Saul's father. And the first words that we hear Saul speak is, come, let us go back. He's ready to give up. These first words suggest he's hesitant and passive and ready to quit without accomplishing the task his father sent him out to do. So maybe we're reading into that, but I think as we continue reading the story, we realize this is Saul's character. And the servant suggests to Saul, let's go, we're close to the city where the prophet lives. Let's go see him. And again, we hear Saul kind of hesitant. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. We don't really have anything to bring him. Servant says, I got some stuff. Let's go do it. So Saul gives in. They go see Samuel. And during this time, the Lord had been speaking to Samuel. Now, the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed to Samuel, tomorrow, about this time, I will send to you a man from the land of Benjamin. And you shall anoint him to be prince over my people Israel. He shall save my people from the hand of the Philistines. So God's already revealing to Samuel ahead of time who it's going to be and what he's supposed to do. For I have seen my people because their cry has come to me. When Samuel saw Saul, the Lord told him, here is the man of whom I spoke to you. He it is who shall restrain my people. And then what happens next, Samuel greets Saul and the servant, invites them to dinner. And he tells them, the donkeys are okay. I want you to come with me, and I'm going to tell you things. God told Samuel to anoint Saul king. Then Samuel took a flask of oil. So this is the next day. He's sending Saul back. Says the donkeys have been found. He took a flask of oil and poured it on his head and kissed him and said, has not the Lord anointed you to be prince over his people Israel? And you shall reign over the people of the Lord, and you will save them from the hand of their surrounding enemies. Saul is now anointed and commissioned to be Israel's deliverer. But we've already seen little snippets, and I'd encourage you to read this week. The whole chapters that I'm talking about. You can see in Saul's character, he wants to give up on things. He's hesitant. He's timid. So God tells Samuel to tell Saul signs. This is what's going to happen. I'm anointing you king, and you're supposed to save your people. And I have signs that are going to accompany this. So before Samuel sends Saul back home, he says, on your way, two men by Rachel's tomb will meet you and say, the donkeys are found. So this is specific enough, you'd say, well, that'd be interesting, right? It's not one man, it's not three, it's two men that are going to meet him at a specific place and say the donkeys are found. And then as he goes further down the road, three men by the oak of Tabor will give you two loaves of bread, another sign. And then further down the road, a group of prophets will meet you by a garrison of the Philistines, and the Spirit will rush upon you and you will prophesy with them. So these three signs are leading up to something, and Saul should respond because Samuel finishes with this. Now, when these signs meet you, do what your hand finds to do, for God is with you. Then go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I am coming down to you to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait until I come to you and show you what you shall do. A lot of the commentaries I read this week, when it says, do what your hand finds to do, for God is with you, the commentators are saying that seems to be that Samuel is telling Saul, you're by the Philistines, the Spirit of the Lord is with you, overtake them. Start your mission as anointed king. You should fight against them right there at this place where there's a garrison of Philistines. But the problem is, as we read the story, these signs happen, but Saul doesn't act and fight the Philistines. Now, all of a sudden, we get a picture of cowardly Saul. Saul goes home and he tells his family, he even talked to Samuel when I was looking for the donkeys. And it says Saul's uncle asked him, you saw Samuel, what did he say? And Saul said, he told us where to find the donkeys. He didn't say anything about being anointed Israel's new king. So I just think that's a picture of Saul's character. He's not taking responsibility or action for what he's been called to do. Right away, even before he's been announced king to his people, he's not acting on the signs or his calling. And his character doesn't change because some time passes here and Samuel calls all the people together. And it says this in 1 Samuel 10. And Samuel brought all the tribes of Israel near, and the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. I don't know exactly how these lots happened in the scriptures, but they did this, and the Lord spoke through them. They're trying to figure out what to do here. So it's not any of the other tribes except Benjamin. Now we're going to look in the tribe of Benjamin. He brought the tribe of Benjamin near by its clans, and the clan of the Matrites was taken by lot. So we're narrowing down. And Saul, the son of Kish, was taken by lot. So now they know through the throwing of lots who exactly it is that the Lord wants to be king. But when they sought him, Saul, he could not be found. So they inquired again of the Lord, is there a man still to come? And the Lord said, behold, he has hidden himself among the baggage. So here again, the Lord is revealing to Israel, this is who you want? Where is he? He's hiding. He's not ready to be installed as Israel's king. I'm thinking Saul doesn't trust the Lord. I'm thinking Saul is probably scared. He probably lacks responsibility. He's not ready to do this. But remember, he's very tall and handsome. And that's what Israel wanted. They wanted the image of that great, good-looking king that's going to go out and defeat their enemies. As we continue here, and they ran and took Saul from there. And when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. Again, there's this emphasis on physical appearance. And Samuel said to all the people, do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? There is none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted, long live the king. Again, I think this is maybe a little bit of sarcasm in here. Warning the people one last time, is this who you want? This handsome, tall man who was hiding. And the people yell out, long live the king. In the weeks ahead, we're going to notice another king getting anointed. and it doesn't focus on his physical appearance. It focuses on the heart. And that's what the Lord looks at. But right now, we need to see plan B, in a sense, before plan A gets installed in the man of God. Let's turn back to 1 Samuel 2. Now remember, this was a few weeks ago, but this was Hannah's prayer of praise, her song of praise. And what I'm realizing as I'm going through and preparing all these sermons, that song of Hannah's continues to drive every sermon I'm looking at. There's something in her prayer of praise that's driving what the author writes in the rest of the book. And we read, I'm just going to read the first few verses. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." Now, one of the great things for me this last week, I spent the week with Tom Kelby. You know, we drove the Edwards van down to Florida. So I got to talk with Tom a lot about scripture. And Tom knows Hebrew. So he pointed something out to me that was going to be helpful this week. There's a Hebrew play on words between the word tall that we read about when they describe Saul and the word here that Hannah warns about in verse 3, talk no more so very proudly. That proudly is the same word as Saul is tall. So there's a play on words happening here. And it got me thinking, Hannah's warning about being tall. And I think what she's speaking about is having a proud heart. But we're also seeing that played out in the physical appearance of Israel's first king. He's the tall one. And we're going to continue seeing that in the weeks ahead. This is the tall king that serves himself and not his people. Just like Jacob's blessing to his sons, we see Benjamin, where Saul is from, as a ravenous wolf. In the weeks ahead, we're going to see Saul playing out his kingship as a ravenous wolf, not walking with the Lord, not leading his people well. We'll see next week or 2 weeks from now. He starts out pretty good, but it quickly goes south. And this whole story got me thinking this week, do we want a king? Do we want a king? I don't think we're used to this in America because we always say, well, we got freedom. We're, you know, we don't want a king. That's why we went to war with England, right? But I think we actually do want a king. We want someone to reign over our lives. But a lot of the times, it's ourselves. We want to be our own king. How much are we like the people of Israel or the surrounding nations, and we want that image of a king? I got everything under control. I got what I need to fight my battles and to win. And as I'm thinking of my own life, how often do I say, well, I love God and I want God to be God, except for these areas in my life. Right? I think I got this under control. Or I don't actually want to surrender that part of my life to God, the true King. Maybe it's finances, sexuality, control and relationships, reputation at work or school. Maybe it's something in your past. Well, he can have that, or he can have everything except that. I'm going to bury that underneath my personality or my giftings or the things that are going well in my life. I'm going to bury it under my tallness. Not willing to surrender that to God. I want to look tall and handsome. And I think if we all search our hearts, we would say, there's many times that we're tall like Saul, aren't we? And how often does erecting that image of being in control lead to regret? And I want to remind all of us that there actually is a king on the throne right now. And he's ruling and reigning. And he's a good king. But he also demands things. But he does it in a way different than what we read about Saul. He's not going to demand the things of the earth. He's going to demand our hearts. And I want us all to think hard about that this week. We need a king in our lives. Is it going to be us? And we regret the decisions that that king decides and does? Or is it going? Are we going to surrender to God, the king who is ruling and reigning on the throne? And I don't want you to just hear this and be like, yeah, God's king, and I'm going to let him be king this week. Actually think hard about that. What do each of us need to surrender to that king and say, I want you to control my life because you're good and you love me and you know what's best for me and you know how to bless me. And I truly want that, and I'm willing to give up those earthly things that I'm holding on to, those tall things in my heart. I'm willing to surrender those things to you and let you pour your blessing out on me. Let's just take a moment. No more tall talk. Let's surrender to the Lord so that he can exalt us and bless us. Take a moment to pray.